On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee, Mr. Curtis Franklin back on the show today. Now, cyber attacks are no joke, but you can still have fun preparing for them, right? Well, that's what tabletop exercise is all about. If you want to be a cyber ninja, you got to practice your moves on that virtual dojo. If you want to make your IoT devices more secure and reliable, don't miss our guest from Keegan's. He's CEO Vincent Corstanier, and he will share some tips and tricks and teach us how to make IoT devices more secure and more trustworthy. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Twiet. On the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This is TWIET, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 538, recorded April 7th, 2023. Paving the mobile security potholes. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Decisions. Don't let complexity block your company's growth. Decisions no-code rules-driven process automation software provides every tool needed to build custom workflows, empowering you to modernize legacy systems, ensure regulatory compliance, and renew the customer experience. Visit decisions.com/twit to learn how automating anything can change everything. And by Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that drastically increases your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Did you know that hiring can take up to 11 weeks on average? Do you have that time to wait? Of course not. Stop waiting and start using ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter helps you find qualified candidates for all of your roles fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Twiet. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals and the experts. Talk to their very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's principal analyst at Omdia, and he's the man that eats and sleeps the enterprise and seems to be eating and sleeping conferences as well. Is that right, Curtis? Three conferences in a week. Is that right?
Yeah, last week I had the great experience of doing three conferences in 7 days, something that I really don't recommend as a general way of living. But I did get to see a lot of interesting folks, a lot of interesting companies. I was first at Enterprise Connect, where we spent a lot of time talking with companies that are doing collaboration and communications, things like that. Then a total of 5 days at MegaCon, four of them while the con was open. That's the largest fan conference, fan con in the nation. The preliminary numbers that I've heard were 160,000 for that one. And then just a couple of days ago, I went over Fortinet. Was doing their annual get together at Disney World and got to spend some time with folks at Fortinet. You know, the company specific conferences, I don't do as many of, but they can be really interesting to get a glimpse at what a company is doing, what their partners are doing, and to talk to their resellers and their customers. So when I have a chance to do that, I enjoy it. And on all of those, the fact that I could do them while sleeping in my own bed was a great thing. So I've got that. Now I'm getting ready, filling out my dance card for RSA, which comes up in about 3 weeks, and where I don't get to sleep in my own bed, but do get to enjoy the hospitality of the city by the bay. So looking forward to that one.
Looking forward to that one as well. Well, speaking of looking forward to, I'm looking forward to having Mr. Brian Chee on the show. He's back. He's my friend. He's also survived MegaCon. And that's right, Cheebert. You survived MegaCon. And there's another one coming up pretty soon for you as well, right?
I wouldn't call it pretty soon. I'm starting to lay out plans to attend InfoComm, which is off in June, so a ways away. But I'm lining up old friends, acquaintances. I'm especially playing around with BrightSign digital signage. There's a lot of digital signage offerings in the market. I actually used to use Google, and then the Google killed the digital signage product, which is kind of a drag. But that's all right. You know, things change. But I will say, being able to run an 8-monitor video wall digital signage with a device that's in the $1,800 range instead of the $250,000 range is pretty nice.
Impressive. It's impressive. Well, speaking of impressive, it's been an impressive week in the enterprise. Cyber attacks are no joke, but you can still have some fun preparing for them with tabletop exercises. Now, if you want to be a cyber ninja, you need to practice your moves on the virtual dojo, and tabletop exercises may be where it's at. If you want to make your IoT devices more secure and reliable, you don't want to miss our guest from Keegan, CEO Vincent Cristania. He will give you some tips and tricks on how to make your IoT devices trustworthy and secure. So you definitely shouldn't miss all of that, so stick around. But before we do, we'll go ahead and jump into this week's news blips. The cloud computing arena is built around two large players with growing contenders aspiring around them. Now, in the UK, it's no different. Amazon Web Services and Microsoft Cloud together control around 60 to 70% of the UK cloud market. According to this Ars Technica article, the UK Office of Communication is a bit concerned with business practices of the dominant cloud companies. So the tech companies are already the targets of competition watchdogs in the US, UK, EU on multiple fronts. Ofcom may concern, really kind of concerned here, and feels if unchecked, the concentration of cloud computing supply in the hands of small number of large U.S. companies could lead to British consumers and customers paying more and smaller groups being squeezed out of the market. Now, Google is the UK's third largest provider of cloud services with a share of between 5 to 10%. And as part of this concern, several investigations have been fired up. In some cases, their preliminary findings, they actually found that cloud companies are making it difficult for customers to switch cloud providers, like the Cloud Lock-in we've talked about before, or even allow their services to interoperate with each other on cloud groups. Now, they feel that high barriers to switching are already harming competition. Now, the truth is, no matter where you go in the cloud service industry, cloud lock-in is really inevitable in the function as a service and platform as a service industry. Organizations should always be looking for ways to architect their services and systems in a way to essentially encapsulate the way the differences of the cloud services that are out there, maybe have minimal investment when you're switching. But organizations can also take advantage of the managed migrations and solution services out there to help people provide that ease of in transition. Now, it's true, cloud lock-in is a big reason to think about the future, but sometimes it also means stability and guarantee for smaller organizations. So competition is a good thing. I believe that. So ensuring that small services have just as much an advantage as the big players is definitely important. It provides more room in the industry for them. But I'm not actually really sure if forcing them is the best way to go.
Well, just in case you were feeling good about cybersecurity this week, we have a story that should give you yet another reason to panic. In a blog post published April 3rd and reported on Dark Reading, Ken Tindall, the CTO of Canis Automotive Labs, described how the attackers manipulated an electronic control unit, or ECU, in a Toyota RAV4's headlight to gain access to its CAN bus. That's the principal control bus in a car, through which they were able to ultimately steal the entire vehicle. The key is the control area network, that's the CAN bus. That's the IoT protocol through which the devices and microcontrollers in a vehicle communicate with one another. Now, once the criminals got in through the headlight, they hacked their way into that CAN bus, which is responsible for functions like the parking brakes, headlights, and smart key, through a gateway, and then into the powertrain panel. If the name didn't give you a clue, that's where the engine control lives. And this was not just a theoretical proof of concept. It's a genuine exploit. Last year, an automotive engineer in London had his Toyota RAV4 stolen using precisely this pathway. Now, the engineer had noted that someone had been messing around with his headlight for a couple of nights before the theft occurred, and then he woke up to find that the vehicle was gone. Now, when it was recovered, the theft mechanism was confirmed. This isn't the first time thieves have used one network or part of a network in a vehicle to take control of the entire thing. And just because it keeps happening, it doesn't mean it's inevitable. You know, it might be time for our colleagues over in the automotive industry to pick up on some of the concepts that are taking off in the world of IT. A solid dose of micro-segmentation with a nice zero-trust chaser could do wonders for the likelihood of a car staying in the owner's driveway overnight.
Now, this dark reading article, I actually had to read the headlines a couple of times because it kind of made me go, romance scams. Authorities claw back funds from six crypto accounts they say were linked to a, quote, pig butchering cybercrime ring. That kind of made me scratch my head. Anyway, the article goes, the DOJ said in a statement that in total it seized more than $112 million in cryptocurrency that was being laundered through the accounts. Quote, transnational criminal organizations are combining confident scams with technological savvy to swindle Americans out of their hard-earned funds, according to Assistant Attorney General Kenneth A. Polite Jr. of the Justice Department Criminal Division said about the seizure. Well, now that we have seized this virtual currency, we will seek to swiftly return it to the victims. They added, in addition to our tireless efforts to disrupt these schemes, we must also work to raise public awareness and help inform potential victims. Be wary of people you meet online. Seriously question investment advice, especially about cryptocurrency, from people you have not met in person. And remember, investments that seem too good to be true usually are. Well, while it's certainly not the only big scam in progress, it's nice to get some good news about the good guys winning this time. Again, just keep in mind, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
EU is about to say chip, chip, hooray to a 43 billion euro scheme to boost the semiconductor game and catch up with the big boys in the US and Asia, according to this article from Reuters. The Chips Act, which was cooked up by the European Commission last year, aims to make the EU less dependent on foreign chips after a global shortage left many European businesses in a crunch. From car makers to manufacturers, everyone wants a piece of the chip pie. Now, the EU hopes to double its slice of the global chip market to 20% by 2023. Now, the plan is expected to get the thumbs up from the EU countries and lawmakers on April 18th. However, the question still remains for me. Is it soon enough? A modern car company can easily contain more than 3,000 microchips. These could be brake controls, doors, airbags, windscreen wipers. They can even be support functions like driver assistance and navigation control. Now, chipsets are like golden screws. They grow. The growing need for chips in more and more sophisticated vehicles and features has meant that car companies are needing to remove features to actually reduce the cost. Now, BMW actually did away with parking assistance and even touchscreen capabilities in various models. It also withdrew semi-autonomous driving functionality from the X3, its top-selling model. And Mercedes actually eliminated features such as high-end audio and wireless phone charging from several vehicles. Now, to me, it's fairly clear car makers must cultivate in-house expertise in this area rather than relying on suppliers or their sub-suppliers for semiconductors. They need to directly engage the chip makers and do the relevant designs in-house. That's unless they want to continue watching their profits fall as consumers wait and hold back their money until they feel they're getting the better deal. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Decisions. Decisions gives IT and business experts the tools to automate anything in your company, all within one no-code platform. Decisions is proven to fix any business process and prepare you to withstand economic uncertainty. We know we want to do that. Recession resilience requires a deliberate management of resources and the flexibility to adapt at a moment's notice. And the Decisions no-code environment makes it easy for your team to collaborate, to build and adjust workflows, dynamic forms and decision processes that fit your unique and ever-changing business needs. So this is especially important with today's IT talent shortage. We all know that's happening. Decisions processes automation software is a complete toolkit that allows developers and business users alike to build applications and automations with no code required. Now, their no-code platform is powerful and includes robust rules and workflow engines and a host of pre-built integrations that connect to any legacy system via API or all within a simple drag and drop visual interface. It can be deployed on-prem or even in the cloud. Companies were caught flat-footed at the onset of the pandemic, but decisions customers were fully equipped to respond. And one of the country's largest private banks built an entire PPP loan application process for small businesses affected by COVID-19 in just 2 days. They were the first market issuing $1 billion in loans before their competitors even started. Decisions let you customize workflows to automate the small decisions, producing faster results with even greater accuracy, allowing your team to focus on the important decisions. Now, scale your business to better serve your customers while reducing operational costs and saving your team valuable time. Here's one great example of how decisions automation software can really help. Otis Elevators. You all know them, right? Otis Elevators implemented decisions to run daily pulse checks across their 2 million units operating globally. Now, by finding potential problems before they occur, they were avoiding downtime and managing their service technicians efficiently. And if you happen to be riding on an Otis elevator, you can rest assured you'll arrive safely to your destination. As a recession approaches, the durability of businesses' foundation will directly impact its performance and ability to survive. How strong is your foundation? Decisions Automation Platform provides the solution to any business challenge, automating anything and changing everything to improve your company's speed to market, financial growth, and operational success. They help industry leaders alleviate bottlenecks and automate pain points in their business so you can do what you do best and change the world. To learn more about Decisions No-Code Automation Platform and scope your free proof of concept, visit decisions.com/twit. That's decisions.com/twit. And we thank Decisions for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the bites. Now, some of the best learnings is really on the job training. I believe that. Now, placing people in situations where they have to really critically think and solve problems in the fast lane is really helps people become more experienced and more skilled. In fact, there's a Feynman technique out there that basically includes the learning steps to how you learn things. And it includes this process of ensuring that you can go dig deep into practical solution situations and explain those learnings to somebody else. Well, tabletop exercises are a way for organizations to help infuse this type of learning into job training to help cybersecurity and IT pros develop better skills and combat cyber attacks much better. Now, they are interactive simulations, and they're often done in teams and used to help improve an organization's overall security posture. Now, this article from Dark Reading actually outlines the steps that they should be taking to help maximize the effectiveness of tabletop exercises. Now, let's dig right in and give you the list. Now, it includes designing exercises that are tailored to the organization's specific needs. So customized exercises, that makes sense. It also means identifying the types of roles and scenarios that need to be included in that exercise and ensuring you to develop a clear and detailed exercise plan and that you're regularly evaluating or auditing after the fact, maybe post-mortem the outcome of the exercises. So these all make sense to have a really good process. In fact, it kind of calls out some key technical points and data points, such as the fact that tabletop exercises can help organizations recognize potential weaknesses in their security systems, as well as improve the ability to respond quickly and effectively to possible security threats. Now, this sounds pretty interesting because, Chibert, I want to throw this to you because this concept isn't new, right?
No, it was called sand table exercises. And from what I understand, talking to some of the old timers in my military world, this goes back. Someone said there was actually a documentation of a sand table exercise going back to the war in the Crimea. So it's not new, but what we need to do is we need to go and take some of the, playbook pages from our ancestors and say, hey, let's go and create simulations. That's what a tabletop is. Create a simulation and have people playing different roles. My biggest suggestion is make sure you have both a red team and a blue team. There's nothing quite like having someone attempting to simulate a bad guy to help you figure out what paths they might take into your organization. So there's a lot of things that can be done. It's definitely played at DEF CON. In some ways, it's also played at places like Black Hat. It's been around and it works. There's nothing quite like having, especially time limits. Make sure your timing is realistic. If someone takes, 6 hours to go and do a response that in real life is supposed to take maybe 30 seconds, that's not very realistic. Get your people that actually think the devious minds make the best red team. And I got to admit, I really enjoyed playing red team in a lot of these cyber warrior exercises that I got to participate in. And there's this one particular colonel that says, I don't want you on a red team anymore.
Very nice. Very nice. I can tell you, they're definitely fun. I get even being a bystander of the process, I've watched other organizations do this before, and it's pretty interesting to watch. So I really enjoy the whole process. And it's definitely a learning experience for even people who are like onset watching. Now, in the industry of experts, we find ourselves developing, I guess you could say, standard operating procedures. And sometimes we build guides on how to handle situations in the case of issues going on, whether it's services or security. Now, in fact, my team does this every month, and we update our guides on how to manage things when in the case of an incident happens. Now, Curtis, I want to talk to you about this, because in the industry, how are these types of processes and exercises different for the security world?
Well, in the security world, again, like Brian said, you tend to have a red team and a blue team. And what they are especially good at is helping to develop scenarios that the blue team had never considered. You know, I preach all the time that the most significant failure in cybersecurity is the failure of imagination. We never imagined someone would want to do X to attack us. And a good tabletop exercise can help illuminate some of those holes. I got to participate in a couple of tabletop exercises, both at last year's DEF CON and prior to the 2020 elections, where there were a number of things that people were worried about. And the red team that I was an observer on came up with some ways to disrupt elections that I had not heard anyone discussing at all. Let's just say that there are some known vulnerabilities in the way that the U.S. postal system works that could have been exploited to essentially launch what amounted to a DDoS attack against mail-in ballots. There are vulnerabilities in traffic control systems that could have disrupted in-person voting. And those were the sort of things that many of the people who had focused on vulnerabilities in voting machines themselves tended to overlook. And so I think that this illumination of unforeseen threats, unforeseen vulnerabilities, is one of the big advantages that comes from a tabletop exercise. The other one, frankly, is figuring out what is documented in a response team, the playbook, versus what is assumed. Oh, we just know that everyone will fail over to their cell phones. No, we don't know that. That needs to be documented and rehearsed if it's going to be part of a response plan. So things like that, they're really wonderful tools that can be used to make a response more robust. And that's really what we're trying to get to, so that where we have a good, solid, robust response when an actual exploit takes place and an attack is underway.
And speaking of tools in the toolbox, I know a lot of organizations, they tend to kind of combine this with other techniques. I know, for instance, some organizations, they do hackathons. I know Microsoft does these where we not only build new things and exciting things, but also we go in and try to, you know, poke at things that have been around for a while, whether it's old Windows services or whatnot, to try to make sure that we find, potentially find issues and then go and fix them, or at least provide insights and visibility into those issues so we can go fix them quickly before they're found exteriorly across the internet. And I think this is an interesting way as well. How well does this kind of blend, you guys think, with the whole red blue team scenario? Is this something that that all organizations should be doing on top of tabletop, or is it something else that it's maybe just not as effective and they should just focus on tabletop?
Actually, one of the things I want to toss in is one of my favorite tricks during tabletop exercises is I used to have a pad of sticky notes, and I'd randomly go to either the red team or the blue team, and I'd slap it on a person's chest or whatever, and it simply said bang. And the idea was, if you don't have a backup and you got hit by a Mack truck or something like that, or something nefarious happened, is your team going to be able to recover? In one exercise that I proposed for the U.S. military in the Pacific was, I actually wanted to simulate a nuclear blast taking out an entire base. And I used to go and say, okay, I would actually, during the exercise, physically pull the WAN interface for the entire base and say, you've just been nuked. How do you recover? So sand table exercises aren't as bogus or anything. You know, the chat room was basically say, yes, Colonel Mustard in the library with a candlestick. That's actually not far away from the truth. I used to have a name tent at exercises that said Colonel Mustard, and it was just a distraction.
Right.
But as more reality you can inject into the exercise, the better you'll be able to respond when someone does decide to do something nefarious to you.
And, you know, I think it's important as well, and I think Brian would agree that this is something that happens. Tabletop exercises are relatively cost-effective to run. You don't have a lot of equipment. In general, your participants can stay where they are. You know, today they can participate via, you know, whatever collaboration and communication system you want to use. But they're a predecessor to other things. In the first responder world, you call them SETs, simulated emergency tests, where you do bring everyone in. That's where you start to bring in the actual physical response. So when you roll equipment, does the equipment show up with everything it's going to need? Do you, you know, you will have simulated victims. How do you handle a mass casualty event? In IT, we tend to use cyber ranges to do that, where we will have a range with actual hardware and software set up, an entire environment. We'll have an attack on it and see how the team is going to respond and recover that system that mirrors what they have in their environment. So those are more expensive. But if you do the tabletops ahead and you're prepared, it makes it much more likely that you're going to get a realistic result from your more real actionable exercises. And that's what you really need to do a couple of times a year to make sure that everyone doesn't panic, knows their role, knows what they're going to be doing when things really do go pear shape in a dramatic fashion.
Now, I would say that the interesting thing about tabletop exercise, again, they sound like the whole process of making them useful mean that you have to do some things within the process to make sure that the outcome of them provide you with the necessary information that you could use to go back and make the adjustments or make sure people are trained in the right thing. Is there some suggestions you guys have when you're running these things that you can guarantee that the outcome is people are learning and ensuring that they have the right understanding of where they need to go next?
don't know.
I used to have prizes.
I used to have, I'd throw bags of stuff at the people when they come up with something particularly clever. Very small, you know, might be a, you know, Starbucks card or something like that, or a Pete's Coffee card. Just something to get them to pay attention and to take it seriously. Because if they're not, no free coffee.
Dangle again.
The rewards are great. And I would say also make sure that your red team is going to do something that is not precisely what's described in any existing playbook. Make enough of a change so that the blue team has to think about it. And that's critical, because that's where the learning happens, when they really have to engage their thought rather than simply reading from a script.
Yeah. My other favorite is handing the procedures manual to the red team as if it's been stolen.
Very nice. Give them the keys of the kingdom, right?
Yep.
Very good. Very good.
Well, we did that. We actually did that in the cyber range exercise, and it was chaos for about 20 minutes, and then they recovered. It was pretty cool.
Well, it sounds like this whole process is definitely, I definitely feel that organizations should be thinking about doing it more as they move forward with cybersecurity readiness. And I think this is definitely a good tool for the toolbox, as you guys said.
Yeah. Well,
They're actually pretty good
at team building too.
Exactly. Well, speaking of interesting facts and things to learn, we have things to learn from our guests. So we definitely should get moving on that. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Bitwarden. Now, Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, at work, or on the go. And it's trusted by millions. Even our very own Steve Gibson has switched over. That means something. Now, with Bitwarden, all the data in your vault is end-to-end encrypted, not just your passwords. Protect your data and privacy with Bitwarden by adding security to your passwords with strong, randomly generated passwords for each user. Go further with the username generator. Create unique usernames for each account, or even use any of the 5 integrated email alias services. Bitwarden has new features to announce in their latest February release, including significant impacts and updates to the key derivation function encryption. The new Bitwarden accounts will use 600,000 KDF iterations for PBKDF2 as recommended by OWASP. Argon 2ID is also an optional alternative KDF for users seeking specialized protection. A stronger mastered password has a higher impact on security than KDF iteration, so you should have a long, strong, and unique master password, the best protection. They also have master password security checks. New users who create their accounts on mobile apps, browser extensions, and desktop apps can now check known data breaches for their prospective master password via HIBP. The logging in with a device is now available for additional clients. Login requests can also be initiated from browser extensions, mobile apps, and desktop apps. Share private data security with coworkers across departments or the entire company with fully customizable and adaptive plans. Bitwarden's Teams organization option is just $3 a month per user, while their enterprise organization plan is just $5 a month per user. Individual users can always use the basic free account for an unlimited number of passwords, upgrade anytime to a premium account for less than $1 a month, or bring the whole family organization option to give up to 6 users premium features for only $3.33 a month. At Twit, we are fans of password managers. Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, on the go, or at work, and it's trusted by millions of individuals, teams, and organizations worldwide. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. That's bitwarden.com/twit, and we thank Bitwarden for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Ryan. Today we have Vincent Corstanier. He's the CEO of Keegan. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, our audience obviously is complete spectrum of experiences in the IT pro and enterprise world, and they love to hear people's origin stories. Can you take us through a journey through tech and where it brought you to, Keegan?
Sure. So I graduated in 97 from the Technical University of Delft in computer science. And my thesis was on compiler technology. And I wanted to see the world, so I decided that actually computer science was a very useful skill at the time. So I moved over to England to work for a company called Arm. Some of your users might be familiar with Arm, but in those days, in 98, very few people had heard of Arm. Arm is a company that designs microprocessors, so the computing heart of most of the chips, and particularly very big in mobile technology. And then within about the next 20 years, I spent an Arm growing as the company went from 200 people to about 5,000-6,000 by the time I left. It various roles in both the technology side, but also the leadership side, the commercial side. I like to just get my technology also used and understand the human dimension when it comes to tech. And then in about 2016, I started heading up the security arm of Arm. And Keegan was born at Commerce Security Things. I'm sure we'll talk about it in a second. Decided to spin off from Arm in 2020, just as the pandemic took off. So we have now been running for the last two and a half years as an independent company.
It's an amazing story. Now, you moved into a very interesting space because I think Keegan does some pretty interesting things with IoT and the concept of eSIMs and iSIMs. And we definitely want to get into that. I want to talk to a little bit about the concept of IoT, because we covered a lot on the show, but we covered the negative side of it. We covered the fact that obviously from a consumer perspective, these things are insecure. They're not updated frequently. They cause lots of problems on people's networks. From the enterprise, even from a large organization perspective, these things are on the network. They cause lots of problems. They're not always updated. They cause lots of security holes. What is some things that you're seeing in industry to help combat that type of thing from an IoT perspective?
So you want to talk about the technology, the security behind it?
Just in general, from an IoT perspective. I know that we talk a lot about on this show very general cases where they cause a lot of problems, but we never really understand what the solutions are for that. And I'm just curious what you're seeing in the industry.
Yeah, cool. I think the key thing is now to exactly look at those problems and come up with a security design team from the start. Right. When we are looking at security, we're thinking, okay, what is the most important part of security of the things on your network? And the key thing is to need to know what those things are. So that's what we call in the security industry, the secure identity or the lowest level of passwords. We're just talking about passwords on that the Bitwarden, but every device also has like a password or a lowest level key. And you build the security up from that all the way to the end. With a end-to-end certification where you know what the device is, you have certified it, you have done the red team, blue teaming, you have done penetration testing all the way through for the certification agencies all the way to the cloud where the thing gets managed. Because again, very important, the firmware updating, all these things are now very important to design in from the start to make sure that,
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that organizations obviously are somewhat, I would say, almost afraid to start integrating these things into their network. What are some ways for them to start thinking about maybe even integrating this security into their process as they start to implement and onboard these things into their organization?
Also, we thought about it quite a long time, and security is quite nebulous, right? What is good enough security? I always compare it with a lock. If you have a lock on your door, then always can someone come around and sell you a bigger lock. Because now, big bad guys out there, right? The bigger the lock, the better. The more security, the better. And what really, really liked when we are thinking about security was the way that SIM is being used. SIM is now very much trusted, right? It's actually incredible bit of technology that's been around for about 25 years. And securing our mobile phones, and our mobile phones secure things like our social media, but also our banking app. Lots of these passwords are all secured by the two-factor authentication of the SIM. So we thought, well, if you are willing to trust the SIM, right, and the industry is clearly, we should start building the secure technology based in those kind of technologies. And that's kind of really the step we took is to make sure, okay, let's take that SIM and let's now initially do it with IoT and cellular IoT, but over time, why not bring that further and start rolling that kind of technology out everywhere, because it's really high security. And I think that is the key thing, that you start trusting it and you start understanding also where it comes from.
So it's interesting you bring this up, because I think a lot of people just think that if you're integrating the SIM technology, you're sticking a SIM chip on a device and connecting to a cellular network. And the question is, how does that make it more secure? So maybe we can tell the audience a little bit more about what's going on in this part of the industry, what you guys are doing with it, and why it makes things more secure and more trusted up front.
Yeah, so the SIM itself has not been broken a lot. Kind of, it's been attacked like the red team, the blue teams in the industry for many years, and actually stood up. Now, yeah, there are some incidents, but generally stood up pretty well against it. The industry has done, I need to go a little further, has done a next step. The next step is to take the SIM and no longer have the hole in the side, but solder it down. That is now aesthetically, people like Apple, we like getting rid of the hole, but from an IoT point of view, no, quite important, no more dust, no more water. But when you do that, if you want to change your operator, you will have to do that via a software update, which is really good, because now you're managing the SIM, right? You're managing this security, these updates, when you find the holes, really important. As at the same time, also there is now end-to-end certification, which means that every part of the security chain has to be certified and has to have certificates, which means that the SIM can only talk to the things they trust. You cannot put man in the middle attacks and all these other things. So it's taking the SIM, it's making it broader, putting some of the cyber security techniques in those small devices, while at the same time also being really hardened against security attacks by having that now the penetration testing, which you'll take effectively a red team and you say, here is a device, please go and attack it any way you want, right? And then learn from that, and then the device has to withstand 2 weeks of attack without giving in. So you know that if this is a certain value, that it would take someone at least 2 weeks to get into this device.
A lot of organizations, they're starting to think about failover backbones being in cellular technologies. This is something that is definitely a recommended approach, obviously, because of just the fact that it's potentially be more secure than some of the other kind of background ways of managing failover of networks and other trunks of networks. Do you think that this is really a good way of doing it? And do you guys have some similar technology, that type of thing?
Yeah, I think limited to cellular, but I think that's where it starts. Cellular is a really heavily defended technology. There are very big companies that work on making sure that your mobile phone, your data is also very secure. But you can build from that, right? So that those techniques can start flowing into other spaces. Again, for instance, if you are a bit of a hobbyist, you start bringing in some more professional equipment like your routers and your switches into your own house. Most of those start with having to adopt devices into your house, having to adopt new parts of technology. And you can see that's really a good way of doing it. You kind of what the new device is. It can be an access point or a camera. You have to adopt it, so you are very much in control. You know exactly where these things come from. The more you build these networks, the more important that becomes. And I think some of that came from the cellular technology. Some of that is already in the network space and is just being rolled out wider. And I think that's that takes away some of the fundamental, the laziness, if you will, I think, or maybe not really thinking through some of the IoT devices now are just awful, right? hopefully we have gone past the default passwords of 50s. Right, can still, right. Yeah, exactly. You can still hear it, and professional IT equipment doesn't use that, right? They use the secure identity. And again, we need to roll it out to everything what we are trying to connect to the internet, and everything we're trying to connect to the IT cloud.
So you obviously brought out the fact that this type of technology seems to be implemented more and more in different devices and types of networks. Now, why do you think that more products aren't using this type of SIM implemented security? Is it just the cost of implementing or integrating it?
I think initially it's a bit pigeonholed on the cellular technology, which is really good for many different IoT applications, right? That if you want to just work, then that's really useful. But I think cellular today, if you have a full cellular modem, it's probably quite power hungry and expensive. Right? Those are the two things. So if you at some point want to go to lower cost or lower energy uses like Bluetooth or something like that, or Wi-Fi, then today not all those technologies have SIM-like technologies built into that. But it doesn't mean that we can't go there from now until the future. We're working really hard on creating applications that are not just in cellular space, but also in any connectivity space, where you take the SIM as a secure element, if you will, in the corner of your device. It does your network management, but it also does signing of data coming off the device. It's again rooted in this really strong technology of security, and the data coming over the device can then be identified as this data came from this device. I know this device; it's a secure device. It hasn't been hacked. It has been updated. It has been all these things you can then check in the data, and you design it in from the start.
Now, I do want to bring my co-host back in because they are definitely itching to ask some questions here. But before we do, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's ZipRecruiter. And did you know that it can take up to 11 weeks on average to hire for an open position? I know it's challenging out there, even in the current market. Now, that's almost 2.5 months. So if you're hiring for a growing business, you could be asking yourself, and you should be asking yourself, do I have to wait that long? Well, if you're listening today, I've got some advice for you. Stop waiting. Start using ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter can help you find qualified candidates for all your roles fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Twiat. Now, how is ZipRecruiter so efficient at helping you hire? Well, ZipRecruiter uses powerful matching technology to help quickly find and send you the most qualified people for your role. Now, you can check out the people that ZipRecruiter sends you. And if you really like one or two, you can personally invite them to apply with just one click, which can make them apply even faster and even sooner. Plus, here's how quickly ZipRecruiter can work to help you hire. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. So speed up your hiring process with ZipRecruiter. See why 3.3 million businesses have come to ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Just go to their exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Twiat. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/TWIET. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Vincent Christanier, the CEO of Keygen. We talk about IoT security and the eSIM, iSIM technologies. Now, I do want to bring my co-host back in because this is definitely a very interesting topic. And so they have some experience here. Now, Brian, I want to bring you in first because I know you have some questions.
Well, my big question is more asking your opinion. So just before I retired from the University of Hawaii, I was talking and starting to roll out some new devices based on LTE Cat M. And during that presentation from my cellular rep, I actually had a custom APN so I could isolate my IoT devices. We started getting hints of what was to come in the 5G world. So here's my question. My question is, low power devices and low bandwidth, but short latency devices like LTE Cat M and so forth, and the newer low bandwidth channels within the 5G world, do you think that's going to make a huge change in the way we gather data about things like shipments, perishables, and so forth? And why has the eSIM and iSIM made that big a difference in adopting these low bandwidth IoT solutions?
Yes, absolutely. No, that's exactly the thing that I'm getting very excited about. Am I allowed to show you an impromptu little prototype? This is about 2 years old. This is a label. The label is done by Bayer Labs, a big pharmaceutical, and it's completely printed plastic. The battery is plastic. The antennas are plastic. It's narrowband IoT, so it's 5G low bandwidth. And the thing is effectively only just saying I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, and can hooked up to some sensors. You can see that Now, this is kind of has one chip on it, which has an iSIM, there's an integrated SIM and a cellular narrowband IoT modem. And it can effectively start tracking things like, for instance, vaccines or pharmaceutical products. Because in the US, it's now mandatory to follow that from manufacturing all the way to consumer. And how do you do that? How do you do it around the world, right? And that's not Wi-Fi clearly can't scale. So you need to think about now what kind of cellular technology. We also, a company we're working with is a company called Skylo. They effectively repurpose satellite, TV satellites to then also do narrowband IoT. So you can think of a product that leaves, for instance, India, gets produced there, it leaves the network there, it roams onto the satellite completely seamlessly, then ends up in San Francisco Harbor, and all that gets tracked. Now, these are pallets, you know, and that is going to be millions and millions and millions of them. So I think this is going to be a huge takeoff in the next few in the next few years. It's absolutely, to me, we've been talking about IoT for a long time, and we do have cool products, but I think to me it's really brimming on this edge now with that that low power radio, which allows you to very easily connect around the world.
Well, here's let's take that line of thought a little further. I would call it 15 years ago, that's how long this has been thought about. The Food and Drug Administration in the United States had a lot of worry about food spoilage, and they started throwing out requests for proposals on how we can go and not only track food shipments, but also get some sensors in there for also, you know, perishables. Has the technology in the iSIM gone far enough that we can actually integrate in things like temperature sensors so that we know that the milk hasn't gone bad?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, that goes back to that prototype I just showed that tracker can be connected to different sensors. So if you, at the moment, that tracker is probably a bit more for high end. So think about the vaccines. Vaccines need to be cooled to minus 40 Fahrenheit or whatever when they can transport it. But you can have a temperature sensor. You can have a positional GPS. You can see where the crate has been. You can see what the temperature is. Has it been within the right space? Now, today, I think if you look at cellular tracking, you probably know for the modem itself, looking at a $10 kind of product. Clearly, if you want to go to all the way to tracking food and at a quite granular level, we'll have to work as an industry harder to get those prices down. But again, as the volume go up, the price will come down. So you know, I'm a great believer that this will really help in every kind of situation.
Okay, my last question. Big fan of the Raspberry Pi and the ARM processor and all the electronics behind that and so forth has made a huge difference in the number of people involved with developing IoT solutions. But here's the question I have and how it pertains to you is LTE, well, actually cellular technology in general, has been difficult to implement. Certificates. We know that quite a few cellular technologies, we all read about the 2004 GPAC that was published in Wired Magazine. And that was because the implementers of the infotainment system on the Jeep didn't even use a private APN. And there's problems on the back end. They were able to talk from modem to modem, and that's how the bad guys got in and hacked the Jeep. So is Gigan working with the implementers to try and close up these holes to, you know, hammer in the best practices on working with iSIMs and eSIMs and to close up these holes that have appeared in publications?
So some of these holes are a bit more towards the mobile network operators. Clearly, they are very closely involved in setting the standards of security, which SIM is the cornerstone in my eyes of that security standard. The other thing as well is today, I think the networks are not quite used to having 1,000 different devices on it. So getting onto a network is a bit of a challenge. But then we have, I'm sure you're aware of this, companies like Murata, the module makers that effectively make little cellular subboards for your Raspberry Pi, cellular daughter boards for your Raspberry Pi that allow you to create, you know, a modem connection. And they are working very, very hard with all the MNOs to open their eyes and pre-qualify some of these boards and set them up correctly, and making sure that this is now done in a very thorough way. So I think the industry is working on that. Is it all solved? No. I think it is just the explosion that is coming. I don't think everybody's completely ready for, and it will be, you know, a learning journey as well. But I think that the industry is putting really hard together to actually make that happen and remove some of those, you know, silly mistakes by having it pre-validated, pre-approved, ready to go, if you will.
Well, maybe the last question really needs to be, is the industry starting to get used to the concept of short connections, bursty connections? Traditional modems, you keep the connection up and then you keep going, you transmit, and then you break it. Burst transmissions or bursty transmissions, we can just have an always-on network and just toss out a piece of data. But I haven't seen a lot of these kinds of implementations in the toolkits. Is this something that we might be able to see from Keegan in the near future? Better toolkits for this stuff?
That's a little bit beyond us. It's more of our partners that are working on the radio, so and the radio protocols. So we are, you know, very strongly specialized in the security behind it. So we provide those components to the people that put the modules together and who put the radios together. So no, I'm not an expert in that, so I'm afraid. I do know that the Cat-M modems and the narrowband IoT modems are much more designed for that that short communication, that few bytes, you know, per month, if you will, instead of the few bytes per millisecond or the few megabytes per millisecond. So these new modems and the new radios are, you know, much more designed for that kind of use case. But again, the detail there is I would have to pass, I'm afraid.
Well, my colleague Brian has asked some great questions. I want to look at something when it comes to IoT, and we're really focusing a lot on IoT in our conversation with you today. One of the great issues that people have focused on in the U.S. is the fact that so many IoT devices cannot be updated, cannot be improved when new security technology comes about. Is what you're doing one of the potential answers to that because of the remote provisioning ability, so that through the eSIM, through trust that's enabled by the eSIM, there are ways to continually update the trust relationship of those IoT devices?
Yeah, yes, correct. So that's actually the big step in from a SIM to an eSIM. When you solder the SIM down, you must have something that can update it, because otherwise you cannot now change from operators. You cannot so you have to have a secure server, and that's trust relationship between the element, which is the eSIM for the security, and the server that updates that is a mandatory part of it, which is really important when it comes. Now, I don't have to tell you, because clearly you are very well aware of this, but it's a really important thing that part is there. Even if you can't update the rest of the system, you can at least update that part. And that means that you can at least disable the system if the rest of the system wasn't good. And you will always be able to control your system and say, okay, this one is for instance, we found a bug we can't fix. You can still then have that trust switch where you can switch the device off if necessary.
Very good. Now, I'm also interested, I think our listeners would be interested to know, when you're talking about, you know, we've been discussing trust in all of its various permutations, are you providing a spot solution, in other words, the eSIM, or with your continued relationship to that eSIM, if it exists, are you becoming an ongoing part of the implementer's supply chain? You know, are you becoming really an integral part of their operational supply chain, or are you providing these components so that they then have responsibility for all the deployment and all the updating and all of the things required to continue that trust relationship?
So yes, I think it's the easy answer. It's a little bit more involved, but generally what we supply is both the software for the eSIM itself, which is the eSIM has an OS. We provide the software, and with our partners, you can then create an eSIM. The iSIM is when it actually now becomes part of, for instance, the modem. So the radio chip itself can also have a SIM built in and becomes an iSIM, which means you can remove one of the chips. Again, we provide the software. And then we also have a server where we connect to this eSIM and iSIM and keep it updated. And that server then integrates with the mobile network operator, the MNO, the MVNO, to make sure that they can then talk to our server, which is super secure and highly defended. And that keeps that eSIM kind of up to date and keeps it making sure that it's A, talking to the right network, but B, also has the latest security patches.
This is really super interesting stuff into here. Unfortunately, time flies when you're having fun. You learn some new stuff here. But I do want to take some time to maybe give you a chance to tell the folks at home where they can learn more about Keygen and maybe how organizations can get started if thinking about integrating with IoT.
Yeah, so we work across the industry. The module maker would be the first start you'll see us. If you want to know more about us, come and talk to us at Keygen.com. And we're always willing to answer questions. Reach out to me myself as well. I'm on LinkedIn. Always love to talk technology and come and talk to us, ask us questions. You'll see us with both the module makers and the MNOs and be powering behind that. And know that we're all working really hard to make it safe by default and safe designed in.
Thanks for being here. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. It was a great talk, chat.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my amazing co-host, starting the very own Mr. Brian G. Chiebert. What's going on for you in the coming week? Where can people find you?
Juan, I think I'm going to be spending some time on the Keygen.com website and learning more about these iSIMs. So far, a lot of the IoT devices I've been working with have been primitive, and I've been wanting other things. So, yeah, I'm going to start reading up on that. The other cool thing is I love tinkering, and a lot of viewers have hit me with all kinds of interesting questions. I'm more than happy to field them. On Twitter, I am ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. And we'd love to hear from you. You're also more than welcome to throw questions, show suggestions, and so forth to Chiebert, spelled Cheebert at twit.tv. Or you could send it to Twyatt at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear your comments. We'd love to hear your questions. And we'd love for you to be safe. And Adam the Fantup, yes, Your mom is in our prayers. Hopefully she'll be fine, but our thoughts are with you.
Thanks, Chiebert. Well, I also want to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what about you? What's coming up for you the coming weeks? Where can people find you and all your work?
Well, people can find me. The subscribers to Omdia's reports can find a major report that's coming out for me this week. I'll also be doing some things on dark reading and on LinkedIn, where I'm going to be talking about some of the things I saw at the two industry conferences I attended last week. Going to be getting ready for RSA. So if any members of the Twyatt Riot are going to be there, drop me a note. I'd love to have a chance to see you face to face. You can always keep up with what I'm doing on Twitter. I'm at KG4GWA. I'm on Mastodon, KG4GWA, at SDF. I'm sorry, mastodon.sdf.org. You can follow me on LinkedIn, Curtis Franklin, and lots of other places. So feel free to drop me a note at any of those. Love to hear from members of the Twyatt Riot and to see you when we can be in the same place, breathing the same air. as is becoming more and more common in these post-plague years.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Well, thank you, Curtis, for being here. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch it, to listen to our show and get our enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat. There you'll find all of the amazing back episodes, the co-host information, the guest information, all the notes, of course, the links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, there next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Go ahead and get the show in your audio version or video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices because we're on all the podcast applications. So definitely subscribe and support the show. Plus, you may have also heard we also have Club Twit. That's a great way to support the show as well. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service, and they also have a bonus Twit Plus fee that you can't get anywhere else. It's only $7 a month. And the great thing about Twit is it comes with a lot of features. In fact, it not only comes with a members-only Discord channel, but it also comes with that Twit Plus feed and also some special events. There's lots you can have discussions with chat, with hosts, you can producers, you can have side discussions, all the amazing channels that are out there, lots of fun stuff. So definitely join the fun, be part of the movement, join Club Twit at twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, Club Twit also offers corporate group plans as well. That's right. It's a great way to give access to your entire team and give them access to our ad-free tech podcasts, to all of them. And the plans start with 5 members at discounted rate of $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like. And this is really a great way for your IT departments, your sales departments, your developers, your tech teams to really stay on top and up to date to access to all of our podcasts. And just like regular members, they can also join the Twit Discord server and the Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends, your family members, your coworkers with the gift of Twiat, because we talk about a lot of fun tech topics on this show, and I guarantee they will find it fun and interesting and enjoyable as well. So definitely and share that show with them as well. Now, if you have already subscribed, you're available 1:30 p.m. Fridays. That's right. Right now, we do this show live at live.twit.tv. Go there right now. There are all the streams you can choose from. You can come see how the pizza's made, all the behind the scenes, all the fun banter we do before and after the show. Definitely join the live stream and be part of that fun. If you're going to join the live stream, you might as well join our live chat room as well. We also have a live chat room that's going on right now at irc.twit.tv. You can join all the amazing characters in there. They give us some great topics, show titles. They're really great characters in there. So definitely join that crew and be part of that Motley crew and also watch the show live. Now, I want you to hit me up, whether it's on Twitter, LinkedIn, Mastodon, wherever you want to go, twitter.com/LouMM if you want to hit me up there. You could also hit me up at louMM@twit.social. And of course, I'm also on LinkedIn as well. I love hearing your show ideas, questions about the industry, comments, that kind of thing. So definitely hit me up as much as you can on all those platforms. And I want to have a great discussion. So definitely do that. If you want to know what I do at at Microsoft during my normal work week, go to developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest and greatest ways for you to customize your office experience. There it is. And of course, also pay attention when you open Excel the next time, because if you have Microsoft 365 and you open Excel, check out that Automate tab. That's right. That new Automate tab that's right there. That's my bread and butter. That's what we're working on. That allows you to create macros across all of your client applications, all the platforms, whether it's web or desktop, and you can run them in the cloud. You can run them on Power Automate. A lot of cool stuff. So definitely check that out the next time you're in Excel. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week. We couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. Of course, thank you to all the staff and engineers at Twit. I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show. And I can definitely tell you we couldn't do the show without him. Thank you, Chiebert, for all your support. And of course, before we sign out, we also have to thank our editor for today because they make us look good after the fact. So thank you for making us look good, cutting out all my mistakes. I appreciate that. Of course, I also have to thank Mr. Ant Pruitt because he's our TD for today, but also he's a pretty talented photographer and he has a great show called Hands On Photography, which this week is pretty compelling. Talks a little bit about privacy when it comes to photography, right, Aaron? What's going on there?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Liu. Yeah, we have to talk about privacy. I mean, you know, this is an enterprise tech show and this is twit.tv. So we're going to be all about data privacy, but we tend to forget that privacy should be of a concern as photographers. So I want to touch on some lawsuits that are kicked off here recently and tell people that are photographers, first off, don't be jerks with your cameras, and also know that you do have rights. twit.tv/HOP is where you can watch the show. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ann. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that TwitNow has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.